Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth. And to all our big Jeremy Woodworth fans and friends of the show, he's not on this episode. But if you stick around to the very end, there's some special tunes that he sent in his absence. So check that shit out. Very end of the episode, some special Jeremy music will be added. On top of that, though, we have a special guest host that's stepping in for Jeremy this week in Miss Ashley Pontius. You might remember her from two episodes back, The Prince of Darkness. And spoiler alert, you might be hearing her on the show more often. On top of that, we have a special guest for this show in particular in Mr. Evan Lappin. He's coming in, a rugby enthusiast and self-proclaimed Mandy expert. So check him out. Now, to all of our listeners across the fruited plains and worldwide, Australia, shout outs, we see ya. Thank you so much for your listenership. If you could do us a kindness, hop on the Apple podcast, drop us a 5-star rating. It would help us out tremendously. And you know what? There's no giant machine of money that is behind the Quality Time Podcast at all. It is a labor of love that I truly enjoy doing. So if you could go ahead, tell a friend, word of mouth means the absolute world to us. Do that shit, and you know what? It would mean the world to me and Jeremy, and thank you so much. Very grateful. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn that volume up to 11, and get ready for Mandy.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
But I'm sorry to hear that. I am having trouble believing you work at MGM and you still haven't found Mrs. Wrong. That
there are a lot of stupid people there. There's a lot of like, just this. It's rough. And like, as Eric was saying, that Jeremy does shift work. So I work 8 p.m. to 4 a.m.
Yeah, that's
so
fine.
So this right now is being up a little early for me.
Gotcha.
I've struggle to sort of kick the getting back to a normal sleep schedule.
Do you like to stay in practice? Do you just deal cards like in your basement to make sure your chops are still there?
No.
Do you do like the thing where you like pretend the pit boss is behind you and you point at him, you're like, this motherfucker right here, he's counting cards and shit like that?
Actually, that's not as prevalent as people think. People think that, like, the funniest thing is, like, watching, like, casino scenes on TV or movies.
Uh-huh.
And they are so horrible. I had one time a Redskins, the whole defensive line came in. And they were playing craps. And then one of them did, like, try to exchange chips with another player to get, like, either chips or money. Because he didn't want to wait for us.
Oh.
He got shortchanged by the other player. And the other player basically kind of ran off. And here comes this lineman back to the table. He's like, this guy shortchanged me. I need you to call out somebody to do something about it. I was like, we have nothing to do with it.
That is so dumb.
Do this transaction with another player that had none of our involvement. That's on you, buddy boy.
Yeah.
Not us.
That's so weird. That would be like buying a TV from someone on Facebook and it doesn't go well, so then you complain to Sony. Like, that's so stupid.
Yeah.
Hey, anyway, it's funny. You guys ready to kick this off? We got pre-show stuff. And welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth. And this week, I am very excited to say that we have a special guest host in the place of my absent brother, who had to work 6 hours yesterday and is just too exhausted to possibly make it to the show. Give it up for returning guest, Miss Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you?
Ooh, wow. Just to let you know, I'm not Ashley.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who's joining us on the program?
I'm Jeremy Woodward.
Oh my God, I can smell your flakes from here. Nice. That's awesome. Well, thanks for stepping up. Ashley, I reached out to you at the last minute to step in and guest host for Jeremy, and I am super uber thankful for it.
Oh my God, of course. I was truly doing nothing better with my life,
yes.
So this is easy to say yes.
Fuck yeah. I respect that you're such a fucking loser. You have time to do this.
Oh yeah.
And our guest this week, one of my dearest of friends, a man who introduced us to the movie that we'll be doing later tonight. Everybody, give it up for rugby writing enthusiast and former Rocky Gorge rugby player, casino dealer, Mr. Evan Lappin. Evan, how are you, sir?
Great. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good,
brother.
How's
everything going?
I'm good. Welcome back. I know we had an impromptu show last week that we weren't really ready for, and seemingly we've done almost nothing to make it better since then. So I like that. I like that the preparedness of the Quality Time Podcast is of the utmost importance.
Hell yeah. I'm literally on a kid's wing.
Hell yeah. So, Evan, we kind of chatted a little bit last week, and some of our listeners might have heard before the show. So you work at a casino.
Yes.
And you've been out of work for the last 2 months. You haven't been dealing the fucking cards like you have been. I'm kind of curious, like, what are some of the scams that people run at your table that you personally have seen?
It runs the gamut. I don't deal anymore. I used to deal. I'm mostly the supervisor, so I'm the guy watching. They'll either try to pull tight, like I do a lot of craps. I sit box and craps, which means I'm the guy that's sitting down in the middle of the table.
By the way, side note, please explain to me craps sometime. Like, can we go to another casino you don't work at, and can you teach me to play craps? Because it looks so fun. I'm so lost. Tell me how much money I need to bring to lose to learn, and I need the fucking guidance.
So the easiest thing to know about craps is seven you win, seven you lose.
Okay.
So.
Well, thanks for clearing that up. But no, how do people cheat in craps? Like, what are some of the shit that you see?
You have people who argue incessantly to try to say that they had a bet as opposed to they didn't have a bet, saying that, like, oh, I bet the 6 and 8 when they actually bet the 5 and 9. Or they try to fuck with the dice or try to slide the dice to get to a certain number on the dice. They don't hit the back wall. They don't follow procedure. Where I've gotten to a shouting match because some guy can't follow the rules, and then like a child, I take the dice away from him and say they can't play anymore. There's a lot of childlike behavior, a lot of things that people think that they can pull the same shit that they pull on a street corner doing like street dice as they can pull on a professional casino. So, and we constantly have to remind people that this is a professional environment, that you have to follow the rules. If you can't follow the rules, you can't play.
Have you ever caught somebody, but after the fact, after they'd already won a bunch of money before? Has anybody, like, not dropping names, but have you fucking caught like a legit scam coming through there? This guy walked out with some cash?
I've caught somebody trying to pass off counterfeit bills.
Oh.
I've caught somebody trying, I wouldn't say like try to exchange the dice or anything, but you have just trying to people who try to get rich quick or trying to pull a fast one or just not, if you can't follow the rules, you can't play. And
question.
What's up?
Well, so my question is, have you ever had groups of like really good looking guys, groups of like say 11, 12 or 13 trying to rob you?
I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know exactly what. No, I haven't.
Maybe go by the name Ocean.
You're talking about, has Brad Pitt ever infiltrated your casino with a small Asian man in a dining cart?
No, I haven't seen Bernie Mac roll up onto a table.
Hey, what's going on here? That was a solid Bernie Mac impression right there, if he had been revived from the grave. What do you do in a situation where, and I know you say you do craps, but like, how do you, if somebody's counting cards, I'm too dumb to do it, but if they're sitting there counting cards in their head, how do you guys even know how that's happening, and how do you approach somebody like that? I just want to know the methodology behind cracking that nut open. Because there was a story, it comes to mind because I know Ben Affleck was asked to leave a casino because he said the casino claimed he was counting cards, and he's like, I'm playing the game, I don't have any devices on me, I'm just playing the game the way I know how to play the game. And I'm just curious as to how you guys crack down on that. And I guess I don't understand the efficacy other than that they're good enough to win. Like, if you could do something in your head, how is that not just playing the game?
Well, it's I can't remember the exact methodology or the thought behind it, because I know there's a count of the cards with face cards and then number cards, and then if the count is in your favor, you bet higher. So mm-hmm. you're basically ranging your bets from a low amount to a higher amount. You're betting. I think it's when the count's in your favor, you bet high. And then when it is not, you drop your bet amount down. Mm-hmm. So you'd be losing on your low amount, low wager game as opposed to the high wager game. So I was in high limit once where there was a guy betting like $5,000 to $10,000 a hand, and suddenly I noticed there was multiple supervisors, multiple shift managers and stuff like that standing behind me watching the game. And this guy was counting cards. Mm-hmm. And it's not exactly illegal, but it's frowned upon. And most likely they'll say, get out of the casino.
Yeah.
They're not going to lock you up. They're not going to put you in jail. They're just going to say, get out and don't come back. Or if they see somebody doing that, they'll say, you can't range your bets. If you're going to play, you have to stay at a consistent dollar amount. Every single hand, you have to bet $500 a hand. You can't go 500 and then drop it down to 100 and then pull it all the way up to 2,500 when the count's in your favor, so you're winning all those big ones.
Right.
So that's kind of – it's frowned upon, and you're asking to be kicked out of the casino. Because they're not gonna do anything. I don't think they're really going to freeze what you do. But if they do catch on, they may hold the money to say that you may be in violation of casino rules.
Yeah, but I guess that's where that's my disconnect, right? Like, so if you're playing, to take it into another game, right? If you're playing baseball and you're, let's say you're a stats guy and you fucking studied your pitcher and you know that on his third pitch in this type of situation, you know he's going to throw that, right? I don't see how that's any different, like going in with the knowledge of that, you know what I mean, than what you're doing when you're kind of counting cards. Like, I understand if you're cheating in a sense and somebody's signaling you and you're tapping some type of device, that's clearly unethical. But if it's all in your brain, right? Like, I don't understand. I guess I just don't understand it other than the fact that the casino just doesn't want to lose money, right? Like, they're too good to play.
All about if casino can do anything to increase their edge, their house edge, they're going to do it.
It's true that.
Right.
So they'll do anything they can to decrease the player edge. They they play certain music. That's why there's no windows in the casino. That's why they try to pump in certain scents in the casino. There's
what kind of scent do they pump in there? What is it?
I don't know. Whatever makes you feel like you want to stay. Ooh. That's why there's no clocks in the casino.
Load up
smells like my crotch.
Yeah, load up another canister of Ashley Pontius snatch. That'll get them betting.
Well, it's always like I always wanted to the line is I only need to get back to even.
Right.
And I've seen some people who win thousands upon thousands of dollars and they should leave right then and there. But they stay an extra couple hands, they start losing. Oh, I just need to get back where I was.
The thrill of gambling is that it's unmatched. Now I'm not a gambling man by nature. Okay, I mean I enjoy it, but I don't need it, right? And I am happy when I win $200. I am on cloud nine. I'm ready to fucking buy half of a PlayStation 4, which we like to call in the biz PlayStation 2, and. I can see the allure of it, right? Like if I wasn't into drugs and alcohol so much, I could see how gambling could easily fill that void.
That shocking, because it's like I feel like we see even like really really poor people who maybe you wouldn't traditionally see in a casino. We obviously see them do it every day with scratch offs. I mean, it's the same thing, just less classy looking.
Hell yeah.
My biggest sort of advice is have a set amount of money you're willing to win, set amount of money you're willing to lose. Mm-hmm. Once you get to those points, leave.
Walk away.
And then with all this stuff that's going on right now, I don't even know when they're going to reopen. You're probably going to have a lot of people who are going to be trying to spend a lot of that stimulus money.
I'd go a step further. Like I'd go a step further. And if you win over the amount that you had set, you fucking give it back to the casino.
Oh, I used to go up to Atlantic City all the time, go to Bellagio and play poker. Like one of the best times I ever did was I basically tripled my money within the first 15 minutes of being there.
Wow.
And I left. I'm usually there for 5-6 hours just grinding.
Hell yeah, but brother.
I left and said, you know, fuck it. I'm going to go get a sub from White House and then leave.
And then later that night, you put three young strippers through nursing school. So congrats to you. You're a fucking humanitarian. I guess this is my last gambling question, unless Ashley's got something. I mean, you're a bit of a gambler yourself. I mean, working at the casino, I'm sure you still go in and like to bet. What's your game? What's the thing you like to play the most?
Actually, I don't exactly want to go into casino on my spare time. I've been in there 40 hours a week, but if I do go in, I'll either play craps or I play poker. So craps is fun, poker is more of a one-on-one game, but if you can get a really good table going with craps, then it's an awesome game.
What's a good table of craps? Is it the people that are playing with you?
It's the table. It's the if the table is actually going good and making money, you can really have a good time. It's the shit talking sometimes back and forth between you and the dealer or you and other players. It can get really fun. It can get sometimes a little rowdy, and it can just everyone's having a good time. Everyone's yelling. Everyone's celebrating. Everyone's just like high-fiving each other.
So you heard it from Evan Lappin. Go to the MGM Grand and spend your college tuition and help Evan out as soon as society is back on its feet. So
you know what? I'll do you one better, Evan. I know you're a single guy. Pour some champagne in my ass and I can be your Bellagio.
Hey!
It's enticing.
Hey, this is This is the addition of Ashley Pontius sans a Jeremy. Jeremy would have told that joke and you would have been disgusted, but an Ashley Pontius, you're like, respect that.
You're like, I don't know. You know what? I'm not working right now. Maybe I'll take her up on it. See? I make you water.
Oh, yeah, baby. Well, guys, ladies and gents, are we ready to get into tonight's topic?
Hell yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to say we're about to go over the greatest movie made in the last 5 years. I'm saying it right now. Marvel's fucking kick it to the curb. This has been my favorite goddamn film since its inception. 2018's Panos Cosmatos, Mandy. And, man, what a fucking ride we're about to go on, ladies and gents. I've been waiting a long time to do this. My dearest friend, Evan Lappin, is on the show. Brought this to my house in 2018. Demanded that he have court with Eric Woodworth. And it was 11 o'clock at night. He drove to my house with this fucking Blu-ray and said, we're going to watch this right now. And I said, all right, let's fucking do it. And we popped it in. And I was not disappointed at any moment. It was fucking awesome. God damn it, I love this fucking movie so much. Evan, how did you find it?
Well, just to start, this is the most metal movie ever. It is just start to finish. It's the most Nick Cage, Rage Cage movie ever. If you want to see Nick Cage at his most manic, just raging. There are multiple scenes where just, I don't know, it's awesome. But I got introduced to this movie back in 2018 with my neighbor, said that, asked me if I wanted to go see like a Nick Cage movie, which he had seen that was just out there. That was... Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, do you like Nick Cage? Then you should come and see this movie. So he convinced me to do it. And I went down to Bethesda, Silver Spring, to the AFI, which is like the older movie theater that they show a lot of like silver screen movies, mm-hmm. a lot of like National Institute, nationally recognized movies. They had this in their main theater. So I saw it in the theater. And there was only maybe less than 20 people in the theater. This is one of those old school theaters that doesn't have the stadium seating. Mm-hmm. And just to see this on the big screen and to see this with all the sound and all the color and everything, it just like kind of, once you finish watching, you're like, what the fuck did I just see?
Hell yeah. And that's I can attest to that, except for me. So when you brought it to me, Evan, I fucking loved the shit out of this movie watching it, but I didn't know what to expect. I came in with no expectations, no nothing. And before this came out, I personally looked at Nicolas Cage with... He wasn't my favorite actor, okay? He wasn't, all right? I'll be honest with you.
You didn't love National Treasure 1 and 2?
Listen, I used to do this bit, okay? And I've seen National Treasure. He's in great movies, okay? Don't get me wrong.
He is a National Treasure. Face Off.
I just feel that he's always played two different characters. He plays nerdy Nicolas Cage, where he has like the soft voice, or he plays fucking crazy Nicolas Cage, and those are the only two that you get, right? Now, granted, I get it. He's in great movies like Leaving Las Vegas. He's a good actor. But I used to do this bit where I was like, you know, hey, have you ever read a book? And you'd be like, man, this is a fucking great book. This would make a great movie. But nobody's ever read a book and be like, man, this would be a great Nicolas Cage movie. Like, I've never read a character that I'll be like, yeah, I'm going to make Nicolas Cage. You know what? I was reading Ghost Rider and I was like, you know what? This would be good if Nicolas Cage was Ghost Rider right now. You know, it just never happened.
Well, it's kind of slightly off topic, but Nicolas Cage is going to be Tiger King. Did you hear that?
Yes. Yeah, I have heard about it, and I'm going to watch it, but I feel like the Tiger King, unless our sweet President Donald Trump finally pardons Joe Exotic, he's going to be out of our minds by the time this movie finally drops, no?
I don't know. I all I want is, because Nick is a very like meta actor. He's like a method actor. And I just want him to get that god awful haircut. And I want him to get the exact tattoos. In fact, I think he's already got a couple that match Joe. So I'm like, that's all I'm excited about.
Hell yeah. But I remember you bringing this over, Evan, and with no expectations. And you told me to just sink in and let it wash over you. And that's exactly what I did. And I fucking loved it. I loved it so much. I actually went back and watched. So this is directed by Panos Costamatos, who has one other movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow, which I've also watched. And is,
yeah, I haven't.
It's no Mandy, I'll give you that. But it is, if you like Mandy, you will like his first movie. It's very much filmed the same way. Does not have an over the top Nicolas Cage, but is very, very entertaining. I guess the way to describe how Mandy looks as a film, it's as if it's like a 70s grindhouse film, but just mixed with Black Sabbath video. That's the best way for that's how I would describe it. Like, do you know the Black Sabbath cover? I can't remember the album, where the guy's like kind of blurry and coming forward with like a sword. That is like what the whole movie is, and it's fucking goddamn awesome. And I think a lot of it has to do with Panos's directing style. I pulled a little clip off the interwebs, and this is director Panos talking about his style of film.
Going on in film today, which I kind of refer to as the tyranny of perfection, which is that on the craftsman level, everything needs to be seen as utterly precise and perfect, or it's seen as a failure. And I kind of like rough edges on things, you know? So sometimes I would allow just those to exist, and I find those more beautiful in a way.
So he likes to, and in the same interview, Nicolas Cage is sitting on this panel with him, and he talks about how he loved working with Panos, because a lot of times he would just one take a scene. Like, this whole movie had very little reshoots. He was just like, yeah, just do that, and okay, that's perfect. And I liked that. So, and that's kind of cool. That's really trusting your actors and setting a world up for them, and then having their creative input be part of the movie. And that's really what you get to see in Mandy. A lot of these shots too are fucking, the cinematography is a lot of like single shots. There's one that we'll get to later that we'll talk about that is fucking really kind of blows my mind. It's a boring scene in the movie for, you know, purposes of the other shit that happens in the film, but I just really, I love his style. And if you have seen Mandy, fucking check out Beyond the Black Rainbow. You can get it off of Amazon. I think it was like $4. You can rent it. It's highly worth it, so check that shit out.
Yeah, it definitely kind of has like that improv feel, like you said, doing it in one take. It's like, you never know what you're gonna get, and it's just gonna have to work. So it's cool.
Yeah, it is fun. Like, I've watched some of the Nicolas Cage interviews talking about working on this movie. He was just like, I mean, I would just kind of come up to Panos and I'd be like, can I do it this way? And he'd be like, I mean, yeah, that sounds fucking phenomenal. And then he was great, but he was like, if there was something he really didn't want to see that way, he would let me know. But anything else, he would kind of let us fucking flow with it, which is, it's awesome. So I can't wait to see Panos's next film. He really takes on topics where, like, his film style, he doesn't so much care about the script or the story. He just kind of uses them as a framework to kind of show you the things he wants to show. And Mandy is a very simple, straightforward movie of revenge, right? But just shot in such a brilliant fucking way. I can't wait. If you haven't seen it, Highly suggest it. Actually, turn this podcast off if you haven't seen it yet, because that's fucking ridiculous. So, this movie starts out with a little quote that pops up on the screen that kind of sets the tone for the entire film. I don't know if you have it ready, Evan. I'll read it if you don't.
Oh, I have it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did some research on where it came from.
Okay, well, give us the line. This is how the movie just opens up. Before anything starts, these words appear on the screen.
It says, "When I die, bury me deep, lay two speakers at my feet, wrap some headphones around my head, and rock and roll me when I'm dead." This was actually the last words of a guy named Douglas Roberts, who was executed in 2005 for kidnapping, robbery, and murder.
Nice.
So it just sets the tone. As I said before, this is a most metal movie ever.
I mean, it is. I don't know if it's more metal than the actual movie Heavy Metal, but it's pretty fucking metal. And Heavy Metal, as we'll see later, does have some influence on this film as well. So the movie starts out, and he breaks it up into three acts. The first act, you see these fucking crazy words that kind of appear on the screen. It says, "The Shadow Mountains, 1983 A.D. And we get to hear some Crimson King, which I played that song as we introed the movie here. The Crimson King Starless, which is, if you're not familiar with the Crimson King, they're a progressive rock band, a prog rock band. And I'm sorry, what were you saying?
King's Crimson.
Did I say King's? Is it King's?
King's Crimson. It's King's Crimson.
King's plural.
Yes, okay. King's Crimson.
Well, I like to really personally call them, to call them Pink Floyd Light, if you ordered them from Wish. But no, there's a lot of big King's Crimson fans, don't get me wrong. And there's a couple tunes I like of theirs. Starless happens to be one of them. Another one is the Court of the Crimson King. I like that song as well. But other than that, they sound like a Pink Floyd knockoff. I will take any hate that you want to send my way for saying that to the folks out there. Now, the first act in general is you get to meet Mandy, who is, you immediately get to see that she is a damaged soul and married to Red, who is Nicolas Cage. And he's a fucking hard-nosed man, logger, who's just working in the mountains, cutting down wood with his bare hands and taking choppers to and from work.
I feel like I've seen a couple porns named Mandy with the same guidelines.
Right? So.
1983, he's about to cut some log. I'm like, all right, this is getting good.
Yeah, here we go. Now I'm getting rock fucking solid. But the casting is really great. The young lady who plays Mandy is Andrea Rosenberg, who is, Andrea Respero. But she just gives like this very creepy feminine aura throughout the film. Her eyes are just completely, you could like get lost in her performance at times. Like, and she has
big
like
irises,
a, yeah, and she's got one like contact in. So one of her eyes is like a different color. She's got a scar on her face. So she's clearly had some type of abusive background. They don't say any of this, but this is all kind of just translated in the weird, surreal feeling of Act One. But the settings are just fucking great. There's a lot of Panos really plays with like the vibrant colors and stuff. You'll see like as they sit in certain scenes, there's fucking just like he'll throw in like blues and reds. They have this weird
pulsating
bed
back and forth.
They sleep in this bed. I remember watching it with you the first time, Evan, when they were laying in bed. I didn't understand that like their whole room is just surrounded by windows. Yeah. Their house looks like a piece of art. She's an artist, and it's really cute. Like she's drawing something, and then he kind of looks at her just like, Oh, that's really, that's something. Like that, he doesn't understand, but he loves her nonetheless.
Oh yeah, he's infatuated with her. He's so just all in with her. They're pretty like opposites, that he's a logger and she's more of like a natural person. So he kind of kills the environment while she loves the environment. There's other like dream sequences and other things that sort of typify this, but also I did want to emphasize that the music is really, you had that the first Starless song, which is the only real spoken word song in the entire place, in the entire film. But was it Johan Johannesson?
Yes,
was
yes.
Was the composer who did all the music for the film. I think this is one of his last films. He died at like 48, just before this film was released. Wow. And it's a really kind of haunting score.
Yeah, I have some audio from Johan Johannesson that we'll play a little bit when we get to introduce the Children of the New Dawn. But one other thing I wanted to bring up, that there is a scene where Mandy and Red are laying kind of close together, and the camera's like way panned out, and it's just a long scene where she's talking about her dad killing fucking birds.
Yeah, the starlings.
Yeah, oh, killing geez. The fucking birds with a hammer, and the way this scene is shot, it's all one shot of them just talking to each other in a very, you know, intimate kind of conversation that on paper you would read and it would be the most fucking boring thing you'd ever get to until you hear about the dad smashing birds with a hammer. But if you watch that scene, I thought I was, it's such a trippy movie. He like pans in so slowly that you don't even notice that like you're getting really, really fucking close to them. And by like by the end of the 3 minute scene, all you see are their fucking faces. And I remember just being there and like, wow, how the fuck are we so close all of a sudden? It's like, there's two movies that have really depicted what I think tripping on mushrooms is like. And I've many times, I'll say, I've tripped on the mushrooms. I've done the acid once or twice. Don't like that. Way too intense. Mushrooms, just enough. And I remember watching Mandy and also the movie Midsommar, and those are the most.
I was just about to say it.
Those are the most accurate depictions of what it's like to be on mushrooms. It looks like reality, but it's fucking weird. And you just kind of question, like, I just remember watching, I'm like, how the fuck are we so close to them right now? I don't remember the how did we close this distance, and just being perplexed by the small things that are happening in it. So it's a really fucking cool shot. There's also a scene where she goes out to go find a dead deer that's crying for its life. And that's, I guess it kind of shows Mandy's caring nature to a certain extent, that she goes and just finds this dead deer that she's almost to a certain extent like Mother Earth in a way. Like, I don't know. It was a pretty cool scene. I don't know what your guys' take on it is.
I just want to know, like, what would your reaction be if a girl told you a story of her father giving her a crowbar to kill baby birds in a sack?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Evan. I wouldn't put my penis away, but I would probably ignore it for the most part until the sex was over and not call her back.
That's super accurate, because I definitely have told Eric that I've killed small animals for joy, and he's still raging. So
yeah. Okay, you didn't have to pull it behind the curtain, Ashley.
You know what? There's just nothing more amazing than watching the light leave a bird's eyes. I get it.
Jeez.
Just watching that glimmer of hope kind of flash across the face and then go cold. God, just I'm salivating
right
now.
Fuck yes.
So Eric, did you like the knock-knock joke to start the movie?
Yeah. There is a scene when Red comes in the house, and let's see if we can reenact it, okay? Ashley, are you familiar with this scene? Or you know how
I am, but I don't remember it enough. You and Evan might have to do it.
No, you know how just knock-knock works in general.
All right.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Eric Estrada.
Eric Estrada who?
Eric Estrada from Chips. And that's it.
I think I blocked it from my brain. That's why I don't remember the joke. It's like walking up to any open micer and just like, I got a joke. Okay.
I mean,
That's the first line of the movie.
That is my new pie plate closer. Shout outs, Joe Robinson.
New punchline.
That's my new bit now is knock, knock, who's there? Eric Estrada. Oh, well, boy. So, yeah, a lot of it's weird. They do things like they talk about in the first act, like they talk about what's your favorite planet, and they talk about the Saturn and shit like that. It's a wild film, but really it's more to just showcase, I think, what the Panos' trippy shit is, because honestly, you know, I realize I'm a damaged person, and I think I have fun conversations for the most part. I mean, people tune into this show, but a lot of people's fucking conversations are fucking horrible, and I think this showcased it more than anything.
Yeah.
But the next day after she sees this dead deer, she's sitting on the bed reading a fantasy novel called The Seeker of the Serpent Eye. And she decides to go walk to work that day when she's spotted by Jeremiah in his truck with his fucking cult followers, the Children of the New Dawn. As she's as he's driving by, Jeremiah fucking catches eyes with the intoxicating Mandy. The screen is all red and trippy looking, and it kind of like freezes on her face as he's just has this image seared into his mind driving by. And it's a pretty interesting scene. And then they immediately start act two, and words come on the screen called that read, act two, the Children of New Dawn. And this is one of the songs you were talking about, Evan, with Johan Johannesson right here.
Very, very well done. And
I do. I like the synth. He's got some good synth. I listen to, there is a whole genre on Spotify, and if you like that kind of synthy, people call it retro wave. There's a whole category of on YouTube as well as on Spotify for retro wave, and I fucking love retro wave music. It's the perfect thing. It's not really music that I like listen to for anything else other than I like it to be the soundtrack to my life when I move around places, right? Like, I don't have to like listen to it intently, but like sometimes like things sync up and I'm like, fuck yeah, my life is a movie right now. That's tight. So
check it out. It's good background music. But I'll also tell you guys, if you're curious, if you go to my only fan page, my description is the Seeker of the Serpent's Eye. So
check out Ashley Pontius' fucking fans only page. That rocks.
Yeah, I'm a very certain body type.
So as we get into act two, we're going to get to meet Jeremiah Sands. And now Jeremiah has a firm hold over his cult followers as they're traveling around in the in a van. A lot of this movie has tones of like what people would consider like, I guess, the male ego and the idea that the world belongs to you, and that men from a very certain age and are taught to dominate and try to get to the top of something. And Jeremiah is just kind of the epitome of the worst parts of the male ego all wrapped up into one piece of shit in this film. And I think the actor who plays Jeremiah Sands is I think he does a phenomenal job. I mean, don't get me wrong, Nick Cage does great, but Linus Roach, the guy who plays Jeremiah Sands, fucking crushes the bad guy in this film. And originally Nicolas Cage was actually supposed to be Jeremiah Sand, but when he read the script, he insisted that he be Red, which is, it's long rumored that Nicolas Cage does not like to play bad guys. Like, he just prefers not to all the time. So, like, it's very rare when you see him as the bad guy in a movie, and the only one that really comes to mind is the movie Face Off.
Right.
Which
we played the good and the bad. bad guy, so it wasn't. It's kind of a blend.
Exactly, right. In the same way, he had a way out in that one because he technically was the good guy, even though he was playing the bad guy. So
also, can you imagine the roles reversed in National Treasure with Sean Bean as the hero? Yeah.
That would be good, but
I also found that yeah, Panos wanted Cage to be Jeremiah, but Cage wanted to play Red, and they kind of like went back and forth for a while, and it wasn't until Elijah Wood, who was actually a producer on this film, convinced Panos that, yeah, that Cage could play this Red role, and then Panos was like, yeah, got into it, and went forward with it. But it's kind of funny that, like, Frodo was the one who had a big hand in getting this movie made.
Really
associate the two.
Well, it's funny because so Elijah Wood has started the company. I believe it's called Spectrovision, and they have produced two. I mean, this Mandy film, which I fucking love, but they've also produced another film which we've talked about briefly on one of our early episodes, and it's called The Greasy Strangler. That is another, and I don't know if you guys have seen The Greasy Strangler. Oh. Also, another film by Elijah Wood, Spectrovision, that you guys should check out.
We watched
with Chris Restivo, and he hated every single moment of it, and I can't wait to make him watch it again next time I see him. Known homophobic person, Chris Restivo. I can't wait to show him multiple peen shots, which are throughout the film. So check that out. Another highly suggested film from Elijah Wood Productions.
Yeah, Greasy Strangler is another film you can find on my OnlyFans.
So, Jeremiah, though, total nut job over his followers. We get to meet Mother Marlene, who is like the older lady in the cult, who he just fucking treats like pure dog shit. We also then get to meet Brother Swan, basically his right-hand man, who Jeremiah orders to go fetch the girl for him. We also get to see the Horn of Abraxas, which is a weird fucking stone Ocarina of Time-looking thing that we will see calls forth some fucking hell demons soon enough. Jeremiah tells Swan he knows what to do with that and says to give the demons a special offering in this fat guy who looks oddly like a mix between Eric Woodworth and the gentleman from a Bad Santa, Sherman Merman, if you guys are familiar with him. It looks like an adult Sherman Merman, and they're planning behind that guy's back that they're going to give him up as an offering, and he looks like a legit guy with full autism that they're going to murder.
I just love the comment that I don't remember if it was Swan. I think it was Swan who basically says that lard ass couldn't find his nose in a mirror. Which is an interesting comment. And then also I read the script.
It reminds me of my dad.
The description of a horn is it says it's twisted Ceylon ivory, intricately carved. Mm. It feels cursed to the glance.
Nice. So next we get to see Mother Marlene scouting out Mandy at her convenience store job. They have some pleasantries back and forth, and she buys something for a $5. And next we see after that Brother Swan with some of the guys going out to the woods to go call forth the demons, and there's this one guy who looks like a full-on dullard who's sitting next to Brother Swan, and he keeps fucking with the window, like just putting it up and down, and it's hard to translate the humor via podcast, but it's like having your little brother just purposely fuck with you, you know what I mean? Like, oh, does this annoy you? Let me do it 20 more times. So,
well, damn, I feel like I need to call Jeremy. I miss him.
there are multiple, like, unintentionally funny scenes in this movie where they're not expecting a laugh, but you're getting an audience laughter out of it.
No, to me, I think that's 100% mm-hmm. intended to be comedy. As a comedian, like that type of bit right there, that was intended to be funny. It's not. There's no other intention for that.
Well, there's other scenes that are not intended to be funny and just come off really that way.
I don't know because. Go ahead, Ashley.
I was just going to say, like, I can't wait till we get to the bathroom scene.
Oh, yeah. I have thoughts on the bathroom scene.
I don't know Panos personally, but I feel like we're into a lot of the same shit. He clearly likes fantasy and, like, Dungeons & Dragons type shit, right, with the advent of this book. He likes metal music. I also like metal music. He also clearly has a background history in the campiness of grindhouse horror when you talk about, like, the Evil Deads and stuff like that. And Evil Dead is, like, the perfect combination of that slapstick humor right after showing you something fucking horrible that's gonna happen. So I think it's a very much intentional part of the director to put that in, where it's like, yeah, you could read it as this, but it's so over the top you have to fucking laugh at it. So to me, I think it's intentional, and it's all part of it. If I were to say anything, this is kind of like it's like a horror movie connoisseur's type of film, right? Like, people who love horror movies will watch this and fucking really get it. And I don't know if the average viewer will, but I can just tell you, no matter what, you will enjoy it for just the pure fucking entertainment value alone. But there are little nuggets like that that just make it fully worthwhile.
It's just that whole summoning scene kind of reminds me of the whole news team assemble from Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, it does have some of that. So so Brother Swan gets out. He takes that weird fucking flute and blows a couple of notes into it, and green fucking strobe lights come on, and these four fucking horsemen of the apocalypse riding four-wheelers and motorcycles roll up, and to me they kind of look like a mix between the Cenobites and something you'd see out of Hellraiser, right? Like,
yeah,
the one dude fucking looks metal as shit. He's just completely covered in spikes. Like, he just looks like he has railroad spikes on every square inch of his fucking torso and head, and he looks fucking great. There's another one that looks like straight up out of The Purge, like white-faced, kind of like the female Cenobite that has like a fucking pussy where her like neck is, and
yeah, it's pretty hot.
Yeah, you know, it has that kind of look. And then there's just another straight up black-faced one, not the racist kind, the goth kind. and then there's just another fucking fat one who's just shirtless. He's the Eric Woodworth one that keeps them all together and just, you know, is down to do cocaine and have fun. So
don't talk about yourself like that. He's the Jeremy one.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. Yes.
Well, actually, they have names.
Oh, I didn't know this.
So the leader guy is named Scratch with a K instead of a C. There's I think Fuck Pig, who is the fatter one with the kind of the nails on the arms. Scabs, which I think is the nail guy. He's got the spikes all over him.
Hey, what's up? What's up, Scabs? Hey, I'm Fuckpick. That's Scabs.
And then you got, I think this the one that looked like had a wax head that had like all the head covering is named Sis. So I guess she's the female.
Ooh.
Oh, Sis, like SIS, not cyst, like the thing you pop on Eric's ass.
We're not going to talk about that.
That's my other brother, Jeremiah Woodworth. And I'd appreciate it if you didn't besmirch his being.
And I'm going to call him Fuck Pig from now on. I'm just saying.
The description of them is like more like Harkonnen marauders than a biker gang. Mm. As much demons as men.
Ooh. So,
actually, that's really interesting, because when you say that, you said... What did you say? Can you give me that quote again? Demons and men?
It says, much like Harkonnen marauders, like Harkonnen from Dune. Mm-hmm. So Harkonnen marauders than a biker gang, as much demons as men. And they're actually known as the Black Skulls.
Ooh.
That's pretty cool. And I actually like that description because for like a split second, it's weird how this all ties together. It made me actually think of Lord of the Rings. And, you know, you see in the Return of the King, you have the ghost soldiers who still owed a debt. And you even think about the wraiths, you know, the nine. It's like they were human, but they're not quite anymore. They've made bad deals. That's very cool.
Fuck yeah. Metal as hell, dude. And
also, one other thing I saw was that it only took 2 minutes movie time from when the flute was blown to actually when they got there. So are they like just hanging around and or is this like kind of like a – like a dog call to come to your master or
hell yeah.
Trying to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah, you
think you're right.
You think you kind of think, at least to me, this is 1983. Like now the Black Skulls clearly have like an Uber type app that you can just order them and they'll be at your door hot and ready like a pizza in 2 minutes. But back then you needed this old style type of fucking demonology to get them there in proper time. So that's just they call him forth. You get to see him and he gives them a nice little cup of blood, you know, as you do when you call forth demonic forces. And they then go to abduct Mandy and Red, who are just having a nice sleep in their fucking room. This scene is pretty fucking creepy when they go to snatch him up because it's all done with like a strobe light. You just kind of see him getting closer and closer. They get pinned to the ground and Red ends up getting tied up with barbed wire outside while Mandy, unfortunately, is about to go through hell and back now. Also, while they do this, the porker, as soon as they are kind of subdued, gets like kind of fucking dragged off by the window. And he's like, aah! Like this.
Well, he's the sacrifice.
Yeah.
So, I'm gonna back up for 2 seconds. What do you think of sort of that LSD, like psycho jelly that...
Well, we haven't gotten there.
Swan. No, I think that's what he gave him instead of the blood. So I know he said blood, like the scratch guy that says like he says blood for blood more, and then Swan says first things first, basically giving him the assignment to go abduct Mandy. But
you it's think
that,
just,
that psycho jelly, that's what he gave him.
You think
that's
it's psycho jelly? I don't know. I think it looked red because when we see the psycho jelly later in the story, it looks silver, and that didn't look silver. It looked like straight up blood to me.
But he said that, like, San Jeremiah said later, is like, we wasted the chemist's good stuff on this girl.
Oh.
So that was the actual jelly that... they gave Scratch because that's basically like.
Well, I think they
the enticement to get them back to work, to get the bikers to work for Sand.
Well, I
and
think
the children of the new dog.
I think they got it to. I think they're talking about wasting it on Mandy herself because she's about to get drugs.
Well, yeah.
So, as she's being she's tied up. They basically give her a little eye drop of some fucking super acid into her eyeball. And then they take and pluck this fucking living hornet out of the fucking thing that's just like encased in this fucking gel. And then that thing stings her on her neck. And she calls it, that's what I like to call the finishing touch.
Cherry on top.
The cherry on top. There we are. And, she goes forth and is brought before Jeremiah and his followers in Red's home. They're all kind of decked out there, and he goes to go put on. She's fucking tripping hard now. Everything is red and kind of slowed down. And
the trails.
You see the trails. It's very accurate. That's more of like what acid feels like at this point. Very similar. Way too much emotion for me. And he goes to put on this shitty record, which I love that he makes the villain a fucking hippie who sucks. Like that is that is every person who loves metal is like any type of hippie music is the worst fucking thing you can listen to. And so Jeremiah puts on his own album to listen to, and I have a little excerpt of it here.
Every seed that gives us life, every man must take.
Sounds like my parents' church.
This is the fucking worst shit in the whole goddamn world. And he eventually, as he's talking to her, he disrobes, and you get to see actor Linus Roach's peen in full view for like a more than long time. That peen, if I had that peen, it's not one I show off, okay? It's not one I show to the world. He didn't do it for any fluff. He just goes for, this is me. Check out my penis. This is,
I gotta
God.
Be honest. I immediately thought, damn, I need to call Justin Schlegel. Like, all these memories are come flooding back. I'm like, I gotta call all these guys.
Very similar to a Justin Schlegel peen. I've been privy to it. It's one of his favorite bits is to randomly in public show you his penis, which is, god damn it,
big
I love
fan.
It so much. This probably will get him canceled, but I want you to know I in no way felt threatened, and I loved every second of it and only found it comical in the shortness of his peen, as we all did. And it's really great. He goes on to fucking basically terrorize her.
He's like jerking off in front of her and says like, don't look at me. And then she starts laughing at him.
Well, before he starts laughing at him, I have a little bit of clip of Jeremiah kind of, he's kind of like, they're kind of entranced staring at each other.
Yeah,
and like
that's a trippy scene.
Their faces start to like transpose on one another's face. And I pulled a little clip of that here. Let's see.
When I was at the bottom of the pit, screaming in the darkness, racked with unspeakable pain for having been denied all that was rightfully mine. He graced me with his light, his hot, loving light. And he talked to me, addressed me as a friend. He said, Jeremiah, they were wrong, and you are right. He said, you are not separate from all that is. So all that is yours. And he gave me his deepest and warmest permission to go out into this world and take what is so very much mine.
Oh, man. Yeah, so you get to hear the pure ramblings of this cult leader. And also it kind of plays into the idea of the male fucking psychosis of ego, of just thinking the whole world is yours, that kind of Scarface mentality. It's not, but mm-hmm. you're kind of, you know, as a man, you're like, you can go out, get everything you want, and this is taking it to the most extreme levels of fucking sickness that you can ever see.
And, if Trump was more eloquent.
Yes. So as he does this, she finally kind of snaps into it and is listening to like the music, and then just starts laughing at his fucking album in her face, and he gets clearly embarrassed and goes to throw it off as he looks at his laughers, just like, don't laugh, don't look at me. He fucking clearly just shatters his entire fragile ego in like one laughter. And Jeremiah, clearly flustered, looks at himself in the mirror and he goes, what do I do? And he goes and looks at himself in the eye and goes, never doubt yourself. Which is fucking just, god, what a fucking cock this guy is. I really enjoy it, don't get me wrong, but he's clearly it plays on like very much like the Charlie Manson type character, the ability to take these kind of weak people and weak-minded people and put them under his own thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So he then gets sister Lucy to play a little Russian roulette in front of Red outside to show how powerful he still is and prove his power. And sister Lucy, she's like clearly pregnant, and he makes her basically play fucking Russian roulette one round, and she just bloop and puts it off. But you can kind of see in Sister Lucy's face that she's like, she clearly is somebody who's kidnapped, right? She's not somebody who's mm-hmm. really down with the cause. And fucking Red can see that this guy is a fucking total monster. Jeremiah then stabs our sweet Red with a fucking big ass gay knife that he has, because like he brings out these, like, it's the blade of something or other. It's fucking
the blade of the Pale Knight, straight from the abyssal lair.
This fucking nerd just brings out his fucking nerd blade and is just like, "Ooh, look at our fucking cool nerd blade. Let me stab you with it." And in front of the barbed wire, like Nicolas Cage has fucking barbed wire wrapped through his mouth like this, they drag Mandy out in a giant sack, string her up, and then burn her alive right before Red's eyes. And it is, he's not happy, to say the least. He's having a bad day.
Well, like one of the lines during that was, I can't remember, I think it was the brother Swan who said it. Said, the darker the whore, the brighter the flame.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would glow like a fucking supernova. So.
So Red, the gang ends up leaving Jeremiah a little bit defeated, even though he has clearly murdered somebody. Red is able to free himself from the barbed wire restraints by losing a little bit of flesh in the process. He mourns over the pile of ash that was his sweet Mandy. He then walks his way inside, and a commercial is playing on TV. And God,
greatest commercial ever.
God damn it, I love this so much. You're going to get to experience the Cheddar Goblin.
And all the macaroni and cheese. Look, Cheddar Goblin. Cheddar Goblin, did you eat all the macaroni and cheese?
Nothing's better than cheddar.
Cheddar Goblin.
And then the Cheddar Goblin comes
cheddar
over.
Goblin!
And just starts fucking puking cheddar mac and cheese all over these children's faces everywhere.
Oh, it's great.
Which is juxtapositioned by a completely shell-shocked Red just watching this fucking horror in front of him. God, I love
it. Red's just in his, like, his tiger shirt and tighty-whities.
Yes. He's just in tighty-whities. He was sleeping. He looks like the full-on Tiger King right now. And he goes to collapse in his bed. And as he sleeps, he kind of has like this heavy metal animation type scene where he sees the ghoul of Mandy in his dreams, which immediately wakes him up. And he walks to the bathroom where he grabs fucking vodka and just starts fucking chugging it to the face and screaming. Which this is where the movie had me at this point. I was like, I never knew I needed to see Nicolas Cage chug vodka and scream into a camera in his tighty whities in a bathroom, which is, the decor can only be described as your grandmother's worst fucking wet dream. It's fucking, God, I loved it so much. His just anger, his fucking pain, just the screaming. It's almost comical, but at the same time kind of gets forth, like, yeah, how else would you fucking react after you watched your loved one get burned before your eyes? God, I loved
it.
I don't know.
I did kind of laugh for like 20 minutes the first time I saw this movie, and I kept replaying it, and I even made it a GIF because I just couldn't stop watching it. And then you're right, it did kind of get me for like a second, because I realized that I sympathized with him in that moment, because that is me 5 days out of every month, just blood everywhere in the bathroom screaming with Jack.
No,
so I get that.
Well, it's just like it's a stark separation from the rest of the movie. It's like it's a non-moving one shot where there's no other different colors. It's this ugly, ugly flower wallpaper, and it's just a glorious 2 minutes of Rage Cage.
And I got to be honest with you, I really I respect this scene so much because it's very similar to my life. Like every morning when I wake up, it's Monday morning and my alarm goes off at about 4:30 a.m. so I can get to work. This is me. And then my wife calls down and says, "Honey, you're waking the kids again." I'm like, "I know, I gotta go to work. Damn it."
I also assume you make that noise whenever you try and take those big healthy poos you told me about.
Yes. Every I get back from Taco Bell and immediately sit down. That's
it's supposedly Cage had a screaming coach for this movie. An actual person that was paid money to help him scream.
I want that job.
I just want to, like, if you were Panos, what would your, like, direction be for this scene? It's like, okay, I really want you to dig deep and just want you to rage and scream and cry and drink and chug and rage and scream and cry.
I want you to remember that you once saw Tia Leone naked.
Yes.
And channel that.
Nick, I want you to take yourself into a place and remember that there will never be another season of the movie of the show Firefly.
Yeah, and supposedly Cage, like, his marriage ended, like, really briefly before this movie started, and he said that those feelings had to go somewhere, so they went into my performance. So I could kind of see him raging out a little bit and taking it out on this movie and putting it into his performance, because it's just it's epic.
Well, who is he married to? I forget before this. Who would he have been married to at that time?
This lady named Alice Kim. I don't know. It was like it was over a 10-year relationship, supposedly.
Good for
him. I remember he was married at one point to Presley's kid. He was such a big fan of Elvis Presley that he married her daughter, because that's not weird.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hopefully one day I'll get to marry Chris Elliott's daughter, and then we'll go be full circle. He then goes and heads over to Old Man Carruthers' house, which is a friend of his, who's played by actor Bill Dukes. Bill Dukes has been featured on two other episodes of the Quality Time podcast. If you go back in our archives, you can catch him in the Commando episode, where he fights Arnold Schwarzenegger in the most unbelievable type of hand-to-hand combat you'll ever see. And then, more importantly, he plays, of course, in the movie Predator. His name eludes me right now, but... he plays Mac. He plays Mac in Predator, who gets his head blown off by the Predator. Mm-hmm. So, Bill Dukes, fucking great character actor, who only movie I know where he doesn't die. So, congrats to him. He made it. So he then tells Dukes that he's here for the Reaper, which is a crossbow that Bill Dukes, I guess, just holds on to him because he can't handle the power of having a crossbow in 1983. He then tells Dukes that he's out to kill fucking crazy fucking evil man. And Dukes then tells him that those are the Black Skulls. He said they're basically rabid animals that got a hold of bad drugs from the chemist and basically turned them into, like, demon-like fucking people. So this is it's pretty fun. Now
I did like the his description of the crossbow bolts that he said. He says they cut through bone like a fat kid through cake.
Yeah.
That's a very good description that Bill Dukes' character says. So
Another thing I didn't need to know that I needed until I watched this film is our next scene, which is him, Nicolas Cage, just deciding to handcraft a fucking axe out of fucking steel and iron. There is a blacksmithing montage where he makes the most metalist fucking axe you've ever seen, which shout outs for anybody in the Maryland area. Whenever this place opens back out, unusual company right in Old Ellicott City. They are a horror-based company. We were actually supposed to do our live show there before the pandemic happened. That axe is for sale. You can buy a replica Mandy axe there. So check that shit out when the world is back into full swing.
Yeah, that was so fucking badass. All I could think of was, I was like, holy shit, Tommy Zimbazzo, who's like such an enthusiast for that kind of shit, it's probably cream in his jeans.
Hell yeah.
So the script says of this axe is this, a demonic axe that looks birthed from hell itself, the handle curving down into a pike with edges of polished bloodthirsty silver. It's called the Beast.
That's fucking awesome.
The fucking beast. Nah, 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 nah.
Metal.
666, the axe of the beast.
The darkness.
And as soon as we get to see the axe, the words pop up for Act 3 that just say Mandy in the most fucking metal font, almost unreadable, that you could ever see. It immediately...
It's basically 75 minutes into the film, you get the title card.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And the rest of this movie fucking moves fast as shit. We immediately see him tracking down the bikers. He sees them riding, shoots old Spikey with the crossbow, who's kind of trailing behind the rest of them. And then he hops in his fucking Ford Bronco and then fucking rams him full speed, which doesn't kill him. It actually launches the fucking Bronco and then tumbles it off into the weeds on the side of the road. But Spikey, he's able to end Spikey that way. But he's so powerful with all those spikes, he flips the fucking Bronco, which is pretty... I don't know. It's a cool scene. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
He then after he flips the car, he has some more heavy metal dreams about Mandy. Really cool animation. Like, I get, if you haven't seen the movie Heavy Metal, again, required watch for anybody who's fucking cool. It's this animated scene where he sees her as a ghoul again. She's holding some weird green light, likely some of the light she references in the serpent's eye that she talks about earlier in the film. But he wakes up handcuffed, one hand, and another hand nailed to the ground, and we get to see the Purge lady demon as she kind of punches him and then asks if you have a death wish, and he goes, I don't really want to talk about it. Which is, what a hard line to say. Do you have a death wish? I don't really want to talk about it.
You know, he improv'd that because he couldn't think of anything to say, and he's like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, that wasn't in the script, in case you didn't know. He then is able to break loose the pipe that he's handcuffed to and cast this fucking demon into a bottomless pit that just happens to be by there, like just falls, like looks like four or five stories down, and goes to explore the demon's hideout a bit more. They find one guy who's clearly been fucked to death in the ass, who's just kind of laying with a bloody ass.
I think that's the that's the owners of the house.
You think so? That so, just have a giant hole in their fucking derelict building, and they're like, oh, that's this is your house. Don't mind if we fuck you in the ass, do you?
I want to back up like for 2 seconds. What do you think of the line that the guy before said? It said, you are a vicious snowflake. And then Red said to the guy, I think that was an interesting line.
Well, I think it's a cool line in a sense, because it lays out two things. One, I think you're a fucking pussy for how much of a fucking monster you actually are. You know, just showing that he's not scared of you at all, and you're about to fucking die immediately. So,
I mean, honestly, it's kind of one of the nicknames I use for Eric when I'm fucking him in the ass. Like, he really resists, and I'm like, oh, you pasty white snowflake. God, you're vicious.
Never change. they find that guy who's fucked to death in the ass, and then he sneaks up on the fat demon who's kind of watching. He's just watching straight pornography and snorting drugs, just and not great. Watching straight up 80s porn, and fucking not great pornography. He sneaks up to go and fucking kill this thing, but he fails and ends up fucking tussling with this fat fuck. It's like kind of breathing into his face and has him pinned down, and he fucking stabs him in the neck as the blood just starts pouring into Nicolas Cage's screaming face, going ah ah, which is just fucking metal as shit. God damn it, I love it.
You want to talk about the spike dick?
Well, yeah, let's basically talk about
it. It looked like something like the you've seen Seven and the yeah. the the thing for lust was basically the guy has the contraption of with the blade on the on his dick and he was forced to fuck the prostitute. So the it just it's haunting and I think it, the funny thing is when they were like wrestling him in this fuck pig guy. Was just wrestling, and before Red sliced this guy's throat, the fuck pig guy tried to get on top of him, but his dick got jammed in the floor, and that's why he wasn't able to kill Red.
And I hate when that happens personally.
I was gonna say, I was like, Evan, you said it was haunting. I'm like, you work in the National Harbor. You can't tell me you haven't seen that shit before.
Sure, if you could take off your fucking war cock, we'd really appreciate it. It's a hard no blade cock policy here at the MGM.
I don't know why I like that so much, Eric. I love that war cock. That's fucking dope.
So the other one pops up out of nowhere, misses him with a shotgun blast, but destroys that sweet 80s pornography that's playing. They tussle for a bit, and he ends up snapping that one's neck and gives the most Nicolas Cagey of Nicolas Cagey face, like, ah! Like, that's just fucking great.
And then he takes a big victory snort of cocaine.
Wait. First, he grabs his weapons. Then he takes a big old fucking two to that fucking mountain of cocaine. And now he has his weapons back. He sees this weird jar of silver gloop. And he's like, wonder what this is. Sticks his finger in, touches it to his tongue, and immediately, fucking full-on acid trip, where his face melts like he's looking at the Ark of the Covenant at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And now we have a full-blown fucking monster, assumedly with demon-like powers in Red, a.k.a. Nicolas Cage. So,
you guys know what that made me think of? I don't know if either of you were fans of the show or watched it, but did you guys ever watch Twin Peaks?
Yes, I love fucking Little. Twin Peaks. Fire Walk With Me, the whole thing.
Yes. Okay, huge fan. So, unfortunately, Evan, you know, this may not make a lot of sense to you if you ever get a chance. You know, definitely, I think usually it's on like Hulu or Netflix. You can watch the two seasons that exist of the show. But for those of you that do know, Agent Cooper is someone that pops up as a main character in the show. And at the end of the show, he kind of has this, I don't know, like this possessed transformation. And he goes from being in the normal state to being full-on psychotic, kind of like he goes to what they call the Black Lodge.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting as far as, you know, Panos doing Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Well, I thought it was always implied
that
he was
transformation of like everything is gone.
I always felt like the ending to season two was him finally making the full transformation into that entity Bob, right? That's now he's
Bob.
Evil Bob,
yeah,
right?
You know how I feel about Bob, yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. What about
Bob? Oh yeah,
Bob?
It's definitely Bob.
So did
you
ever watch
you're seeing sort of Red sort of battle his demons and then becoming sort of this darker version of himself through this revenge trip.
Hell yeah.
Exactly.
It's this transformation where he's just getting psycho and he's getting he's looking the part, he's dressed all in black. He's got like a face covered in caked blood and it's
fucking metal as hell is what it is. And he then,
fucking dope.
With his new fucking, with his eyeballs fucking greased with acid, he goes outside to go find the fourth horseman, who's just having a peaceful time watching a burning car. He goes and gives him the old crossbow to the neck. That fucking demon pulls it out of his fucking neck, and they have a good old knife versus beast axe fight outside that ultimately ends with that demon getting decapitated and Red going and lighting a cigarette off of his burning head. Fucking
that's awesome.
Fuck yeah, dude. So, again, he's on a killing spree. He's taking care of the demons. Now it's time for the Children of Dawn. But first, he needs to make a little pit stop at the chemist. And boy, if this movie can't get any fucking stranger, the chemist is highly strange. He has a tiger that's just sitting in his lab. The actor who plays the chemist, I only recognize him from one other movie. I think it's movie... I think it's called 33 or 31, the Rob Zombie film.
He plays
the main bad guy in that. And
he was also in, I think, Batman Begins. He was Joe Chill. The guy who plays Jeremiah plays Bruce's father. Thomas Wayne?
Yeah.
Thomas Wayne. So Linus Roach and... I don't have the guy's name. I think Robert Brake, I think his name is, who plays the chemist. They play in Batman Begins, so that's another thing that I've seen him in.
Well, now, wait, is this the same guy, or am I getting my character switched up? One of the people in this movie, either the chemist or Jeremiah, one of them is also from the god-awful version of the game Zoom, Doom. Anybody watch that?
I've watched it and I've tried to forget it. I know it's a Keith Urban.
Is that
Urban.
The one with The Rock?
That's the one with The Rock and Keith...
Urban.
Keith Urban, yes. And
Carl
Urban. Keith Urban, singer. Carl Urban, Judge Dredd. He's great in that. This movie, Doom, is one of the biggest piles of shit I've ever sat through.
It is, but I still own it.
I would watch again, though. Would watch again. Yeah. So this chemist goes up to him. He's just like, man. Red says nothing to him, and the chemist just talks, and he's just like, they wronged you. Why they gotta be like that? And then he releases the tiger, who peacefully just walks by Red, because Red is just saying everything by staring at him right now. And he convinces him to give him the location of the Children of the New Dawn. And the location is North.
Well, I think one of the other parallels that I saw was that I think the tiger represents Red a little bit. Because you had the tiger shirt earlier that Red had, and basically letting the tiger out is letting Red be free to bring havoc on the world.
Fuck yeah.
No, that's a good point.
Good fucking... Listen, you're bringing the solid facts to this episode. We've never had
this. I got the notes.
So... He goes up and takes one of the demon's four-wheelers up to the abandoned mine where they are hiding out. First, he waits for a little bit till Swan leaves. Then he grabs Brother Swan out of the van and then says... as he's got him pinned down, Brother Swan tries to give his own little metal speech where he's like, better to burn out than... And then fucking catches the axe end into his mouth. Like, no, you don't get to be metal. I'm the only one that gets to be metal, you fucking hippie loser. And just watch Brother Swan fucking choke blood for a good 5 or 6 seconds. But Sister Lucy's in the passenger side seat. He lets her go. He lets her go. Not part of the vengeance reign. He clearly sees her as a victim of all this. And so Lucy's been freed. So pretty nice.
I did like the inclusion of the Highlander line that Swan tried to get out.
Yeah.
So is it better to burn out than to fade away?
Yeah.
So he tried to get it out, but
no.
Yeah, that
you don't. You don't even get last words, right? Like the shit you did to me, you don't get a last word. I get the fucking last say in what you fucking say. Boom. And he then goes into goes towards their weird demonic church that they have set up in the middle of this mine, and finds a chainsaw, his new tool of destruction. But a goon pops out who has a chainsaw that's like five times fucking longer than his.
Well, you got to back up one second.
Yeah.
About the you have the dullard guy who's cleaning his car, and he gets the axe to the head.
He does spinning
through the air.
He does throw the spinning axe, and it gets embedded in the guy who was doing the window scene earlier. Yes, he does get murdered right there. but then this other guy who comes out with the bigger chainsaw, I will say, second best chainsaw fight in all of cinema that then transpires between these two. First being,
I know what it's going to be.
What do you think my first best chainsaw fight is, Ashley?
I feel like after having you last night, I feel like you're going to say Army of Darkness.
No, but that is a good guess.
Isn't that a
solid
chainsaw?
That is a good chainsaw fight, and don't get me wrong, I love it. But chainsaw versus chainsaw fight, my favorite is from the movie Phantasm. Phantasm 2, to be precise. There is a scene where...
that is fair.
He walks down and fights that one goon down there, and they have a fucking full-out chainsaw fight. Oh, God, I fucking love that scene so much. This is the second best version of that, and they have this fucking all-out fight. Fucking Red is actually losing for a little bit, but he's able to fucking grab an actual chain and then trips up the guy, who falls on the giant saw blade that then just sprays blood fucking everywhere all over the stone rocky area that they're fighting in. Pretty fucking metal fight scene. Pretty metal fight scene.
I just think it's kind of interesting that probably during the writing of this movie, the script, they're talking, okay, we have to have this epic fight in sort of the last act of this movie. Can't think of what we could be fighting. And then somebody says, chainsaw fight. One guy's a small chainsaw, one guy's a long chainsaw. Chainsaw fight. Let's do it.
It's fucking dope. I've always wanted to see a lumberjack getting some major, like, major otherworldly bar fight, essentially, and be like, you know what? I got a motherfucking chainsaw.
Fuck yes. God, I love it.
Bringing
so much
a chainsaw to a gunfight. Pa-pow!
So he walks into this perverse church that they have built out here in the middle of nowhere, and descends down through a trap door to the tunnels beneath. He runs into Lady Marlene, who offers him some blowies. He declines and then murders Marlene and tosses her head into the next room, where Jeremiah is just hanging out shirtless in a weird fucking room all by himself. He goes to confront Jeremiah, who goes up to him and is kind of starting to plead for his life, even offers a fucking blowjob to him, where he just goes, I'll suck your fucking dick, man! Which is fucking hilarious. He then changes his tune and looks at him. He goes, no, you kneel before me. And then Nicolas Cage looks him dead in the eyes and goes, I'm your god now. And fucking crushes his head with his bare hands. Oh, God. Oh. Fucking, what a great ending. Justice is served. Amazing fucking climax to the film here. But hey, when you actually watch the movie, man, this scene with fucking Jeremiah is a 10 out of 10, where he's kind of like still trying to get him under his thumb. Like, yeah, you should join me. You know, this is kind of, I'll suck your dick, man. Just, it's such a fucking beautiful scene.
I have had that conversation with many people at many clubs. Be like, I'll suck your dick for 10 minutes. And I'm like, I'm your god now.
And
I just crush their heads in. And I'm like, ah.
He then goes and he burns the whole place down. He hops into the station wagon that's parked outside. He starts having some flashbacks about Mandy, his sweet, and a smile starts to kind of rub across, like, be present on his face. He looks in the passenger side seat and he can see her almost riding there with him. And the movie ends with just this maniac, blood-soaked faced Nicolas Cage just smiling ear to ear at the camera. And that brings us to an end of fucking Mandy. Man, what a ride, guys. What a ride. Ugh. Yeah, I think we've really talked about it all. I love this movie so much. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Rent it from your local Blockbuster immediately if you only live in Alaska, where the last one of those things exist. Evan, writer of rugby sports, he usually writes up things for old DC Old Glory.
Old Glory DC.
What happens if I say it in the wrong fashion? What happens then?
The rugby police are going to come and arrest you.
I love the Redskins Washington. You know that. And I'll never change the way I say that. So you could check. Where can people find you on Twitter and stuff like that, Evan?
It's at Evo Rugby, E-V-O Rugby. I do, when I'm reporting, I put all my stuff on there. Hopefully when all this shit gets back to quote-unquote normal, they'll restart everything, and then hopefully I'll be writing for USA Rugby again, and also for Old Glory when they get back up and running. But in the meantime, if casinos open again, you can come see me down in MGM National Harbor.
Fuck yeah, go check that out. And Ashley, thank you so much for stepping in, filling the very easy shoes of Jeremy Woodworth this afternoon. We really appreciate you. As always, my sweet Belle, where can people find you?
Thank you so much for having me, Eric. I had such a good time. So nice to share this with you. And it was so nice to meet Evan and hear more about his awesome, badass opinions about this movie. One last thing, I just got to say, my only complaint, spoiler alert, not enough Barry Manilow. A little bit disappointed about that. Was not prepared. No song and dance, no piano, a little pissed. But other than that, you can normally catch me on Instagram, my Facebook fan page, Twitter, Tumblr, TikTok. You know, I'm always bored. You can find me at Ashley Pontius Laughs.
Fuck yeah, Ashley Pontius Laughs. Make sure you guys check that out. Of course, you can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. That's Eric with a K, comedy with a C. The second Saturday shit show is free every second Saturday of the month. Currently, they're doing virtual shows. That's hosted by Mr. Mike Quinlan, guest of the show, and former host of the show, Miss Kimberly Callahan. September 6th, McGoobie's Joke House, Die Laughing Productions will return with a new murder mystery. Come check that shit out. It's called The Final Rose. It's going to be amazing. Check that out. Oh, and for anybody that's still listening, a special Jeremy song to play right at the end of this. And we all know how much you love Jeremy. Mandy fucking rocks!
That's porn. So you stack it up, you stack it up by your bed. 1,000 portals in your room, sitting right on your bed. But then you hit it in the night, and then it comes on your head. It's a porn-a-lance, 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 porn-a-lance. Cause it's covering your whole head. Pornolash. You know you can just use the internet. Yeah. But you have a ton of magazines there by your bed. Sitting there at your reach. That's why you got a pornolash. Pornolash. You're drowning cause you hit it with your arm. It's pornolash. I thought
Arizona was never made a book. 8 millimeter was never a book.